Rebel Force Radio presents...
Excuse me, sir. Might I inquire what's going on?
This is RFR Q&A.
Hey, Star Wars fans. Jimmy Mack here with you, and welcome back to another edition of RFR Q&A. The Q&A is back for the month of May. Yeah, this is the first Q&A of May. And joining me this time around is RFR VIP, Chris Turtle Wars Hagen. Chris.
Hey, Jimmy. How you doing? Good to see you again. It's been several days since I've seen you in person. So
it's only been a few days. Yeah, you were out with us in Bristol for the big May the 4th Be With You RFR Live event. And I'm really glad you made it out there. And thanks a lot for joining us. The thing was a huge success. So
yes, it was. And it was a great time, and glad to have this slot like right after that. So still fresh in my mind, and meeting everybody was excellent. I mean, the whole time was just a great time. And it was really, really good. I think six VIPs total made it, but then dozens and dozens of regular Patreon and RFR's listeners. I mean, it was a really good turnout, I thought.
Yeah, it was great. And we wanted to get all the VIPs up on stage at one point, but we ran short of time. So we only made it through about half of them. But
Peter and I afterwards were thinking, I'm kind of glad we didn't get called out. We put on the spot.
You never know. You never know. I had heard that. Peter was relieved. Peter Beiser. See, he can't get up on stage without a sixer of some kind of beer. But we all hung out together at the after party at the hotel. And that was cool.
Yes, it was.
It was great to see you guys out at that one. And that went on till about 2 in the morning. And I knew it was on shaky ground when we all moved from the front of the hotel to the back patio, and the security guards were all over us telling us we were not supposed to be there.
Yes, they
were. But, they said we could stay as long as we clean up after ourselves.
Yeah.
Which I thought was so odd. I thought, you know, between us congregating in front of the hotel, like blocking the front door of the place, they were fine with that. We could have stayed there till 6 in the morning if we wanted to.
Yeah.
But when we moved into the patio, that was all of a sudden.
Where nobody else was, it was in a dark corner of the back of the hotel. Like, what was the big deal?
Yeah, really. It was.
Because actually, we were out there the night before.
Yeah.
You were asleep. You walked right by us in the beeline from the counter to bed.
I was still
out back with Jason when you texted him at 1 in the morning saying fell asleep.
I did. Glenn Nelson picked me up at the airport and took me on a tour of Connecticut breweries. And we hit a couple of good ones. And by the time I got to the hotel, I don't know, I was ready. I was fully prepared to keep going with you guys.
Yeah.
Went up to the room, called Wendy, turned on the TV. Star Wars was on TV because it was like TBS or TNT. One of them was running it all weekend long. And I sat there and I started watching. I think it was Rise of Skywalker. And then I just closed my eyes for a minute. And when I woke up, Rise of Skywalker had ended, and I think Solo was on, and it was halfway over. And I said, this can't be good. I looked at my watch, and I was like, I've been sleeping for 3 hours. Mm-hmm. And there was no way I was going to recover from that and join you guys. But you guys are still down at the patio going strong.
Yeah, so a handful of people. So it was Friday night. There wasn't that many people there yet, obviously, but Jason and his friend Joel and Eric and Glenn and I forget who's Glenn's friend who was with them all weekend. I can't remember his name. It's escaping me. But anyway, there were a handful of people there. And I think we stopped at about 2. and then the second night, Jason and myself and Joel were the last 3 standing at 3 a.m. in the lobby downstairs.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I had an earlier flight, so I went to bed earlier, like 1:30.
1:30, not that much earlier.
I heard security came and cleared everyone out of the patio after.
Yeah, they kicked us out. We moved to the hotel lobby for a little bit long, another hour or so.
Jeez. That's great. Yeah, I would have joined you on that Friday night, but yeah, I pass out. And so when I told this to Wendy, she goes, oh, I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why? She said, oh, just, you know, talking to you on the phone list. I said, well, what did I say? She goes, you said you were surprised you hadn't seen Schwank. And I was like, oh, okay. I get it.
Yeah.
But, you know, we were all pretty responsible, I think.
There was no trouble that I heard of.
No.
Nothing out of control.
but it was fun, man. It was fun. It went by quickly.
The first part of my pictures I sent you were just like 5 or 6 photos from that week.
Well, you sent me a slideshow. You want to go through them?
Well, let's just do the ones from Bristol at least.
Well, okay. I mean, oh.
That's not from Bristol.
I'm at the very end of it. Or
that's the very end. Yeah, I go to the beginning.
Right. Let's just, until we get to Bristol, what is all of this?
Still, this just real quickly. So I had an hour to kill on. So Friday night, you know, we just talked about that. That was great hanging out with everybody and on the back porch, in the freezing cold. You guys, that was a cold ship up there. I'm from South Carolina.
Oh, it was.
It's colder than where I'm from. Our lows are the highs up there.
Yeah.
At least those 2 days. Anyway, so I had an hour to kill before the event on the 4th. On Saturday, and there was a New England Carousel Museum, like a 2-minute walk from where we were.
Oh, no kidding.
So I went over there for about a half an hour. I just looked around at this. I mean, just threw that in there. It's kind of interesting, kind of funny. But, you know, I walked around it, and there was also inside it a smaller museum of firefighting and then a one-room museum of Greek history. It was a really kind of strange.
Wow. So, what a weird museum. Oddities from all over the world.
Oddities from all over the world, old historical carousel horses, and they restore these things, and it's a carousel museum. I saw it on the map right next to the theater, so I just went into it for 30 minutes before the event.
Wow, what a weird place. I had no idea anything was around the theater. It seemed like it was in the middle of nowhere from what I could tell.
Yeah, it seemed like. I mean, it was a school campus. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was poking around in some of the back rooms, and I noticed chairs were set up sort of like in a classroom type of environment. Yeah. And I didn't even know anything about that theater. It was a nice theater, though.
Yeah.
Here's a picture of us on stage.
We've all seen this, of course, now since you posted the video the other day, but I just had this in here. This was the main event, and it looked great. It sounded great. I mean, 2 hours of live RFR. That was a nice event. I mean, it was great.
And it was just nice to have it in a theater environment with a sound guy and everything. So we weren't responsible for all of that. We were firing off elements from the stage, like pictures and sound, but the guy was taking care of everything. And, so it was pretty flawless as far as the way it all went down. In just such a nice theater. I got to admit, it was a real relief to see that people were sitting in the seats when we got on stage. I was like, but we had heard earlier that a lot of tickets had sold. Mm-hmm. So we were pretty happy about that. And
to me, I mean, I was up in the front, but when I looked around, it looked like it was pretty packed to me.
Having it in a theater makes it a little bit different than our typical live events or remotes, which are often in bars.
Yeah.
And it can get kind of rowdy and a little crazy and stuff. But this one was all pretty pretty much mellow and easy to manage. And so we were able to do a proper show, it felt like.
Yeah.
So that was a lot of fun. And there you see us on the stage with High Adventure. And then later that night, they screened Empire Strikes Back. And so it looks like you stuck around for that.
Not the whole thing, but part of it, yes. And it sounded really good. It looked really good. A lot of people were there, as you can see from the crowd. So it was, yeah, it was. That was nice, too, because I haven't seen Empire on a big screen, I guess, since the special edition, since 97, I think.
Same here. I missed the time that it was re-released during the pandemic.
Yeah.
I just didn't go. I don't know. I was getting too accustomed to staying home all the time, I guess. Yeah. I like a lot of us, I guess. Oh, and then here's the after party in the hotel bar.
Yep, this is where we spent, both evenings. But, yeah, this is where we hung out for a good portion of the night.
You see Scott St. Louis there, his blue milk. So he suddenly appeared with a blender. And he's making this blue milk concoction, and I had a ton of that, and that was really good. I also see Peter Beiser in the front there, Eric from Phoenix, there's Tyler, some people wearing RFR shirts. It was really cool.
We're Star Wars people, RFR people, and this woman here on the end of the counter in the pink and white striped shirt, I was talking to her for a little bit when I was ordering a drink. And she was not with us. And this was like her little hometown food place to go to on her way home from work. And she's like, coming in here for a quick dinner. Like, holy cow, what's going on in here? So I explained it to her. And she said that her parents and her children were big Star Wars fans, but it skipped her.
Oh, well, not everybody's perfect.
Right.
Congregated in front of the hotel now. We all moved out to the front.
Yeah, the smoking lounge and the Malort tasting area.
Oh, the Malort. Oh, my God. I have funny.
I was sitting on a trash can right over by that pillar there.
Oh, I guess so, yeah.
we cleaned it up, though. We got all the way through it. But I took a pretty big swig, and that was enough for me, I think, for a lifetime.
It tastes like Lysol mixed with gasoline. And that's being kind.
Yeah.
That's being kind. It leaves you with this kind of almost perfumey sort of feeling in your nasal cavities. It's just nasty stuff.
Yes, it is.
It's like, you know, how Hawaiians make tourists eat poi?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I don't really care for that stuff. I always considered that to be sort of a joke they played on mainlanders.
It's kind of like milk of magnesia or chalk or something.
Yeah, it's right. Chalky, right.
Chalky.
And so the Malort is sort of Chicago's version of poi. You know, this really crappy crap we make people drink. But I've sat at bars and watched guys just down shot after shot after shot of that stuff. And, and like the most unhealthy looking people you'll ever come across. But here it is. Here's the whole gang of us out in front of the hotel. It looks like there's maybe 25 people there, and so, and like we're blocking the entrance of the place and just whooping it up. And they were fine. We could have stayed there till the sun came up, as far as I could. But as soon as we went to that patio area, everybody was on top of us, begging us, please don't leave a mess, please.
Right.
And then you were trying to start the fire pits.
Paint fire pit, and it wouldn't stick. It wouldn't adjust and stay in, so the flame would stay on. And actually, Scott St. Louis took a nice picture of that and posted it in the Patreon chat. And me trying to keep that thing lit.
Yeah, it just wasn't happening. It just wasn't happening. Oh, and so here we are in the patio now. This is a lot of the group is moved on, I think, at this point. These are only the hardcores are still there.
Hey, hards.
I was getting reports of someone getting sick in a garbage can.
I don't know about that.
No, you don't know about that? because that must have happened after I left. Like I said, I left at around 1:30 a.m. I see Joe Dallas there and Glenn, Eric from Phoenix, There's everyone's there. Matt Rashid.
Yeah.
All the VIPs united and having late night beverages. Oh, there I am with Swank and Chris Sorrentino, a.k.a. Baby Belushi, who I did not see at all that weekend without a beer can in his hand. He had beer cans constantly. He came up on stage with a beer can. He was
spilling it all over the place, and because he was dancing around. That was great. He came prepared. I mean, the back of his truck or his vehicle, he had a cooler back there.
Yeah,
he was messing around.
Well, he's always great to have at the party, and that's why we have him out to Chicago for the Blues Brothers Fest. Yeah. And that's going to be happening again this summer. Here's another photo, Glenn, Swank, me, and that guy, that's Jesse.
Yeah, okay, that's right, yes. Yeah,
Jesse, who proclaims that he is the East Coast version of Tyler for all these old man Star Wars fans. He's like the youth in their group. And I don't know if there can be more than one Tyler. I just want to say that, you know.
I don't think so.
You know, Tyler busted his hump that whole weekend, shooting the video, just, you know, being around for us, taking every photo that was during the meet and greet.
That went on cover. Man, you guys had a line out the door all day long.
We couldn't believe that. They said after the show, they said to me and Swank, we want you to do a meet and greet down in the gallery. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, all right, well, you know, once we got all of our stuff done, where's the gallery? And I go down there, and there's a line that goes on for 2 hours out the door. And that was just great. That was just great. So we spent a lot of time with everyone who came up and talked to us, and we took selfies with them and stuff. And
you guys were giving them the Ashley treatment for sure.
Yeah. No doubt about it. You know, I've seen Ashley Eckstein do her thing at conventions for a long time.
Yeah.
And she's never under pressure by how long the line is or anything like that. She takes her time with everyone. Nobody rushes her. And that's the way to do it. It sucks if you're in line because it takes a while to get through it. But at least there's a payoff. It's not just like, you know, the assembly belt at the Ford factory where you're just moving through.
I was hanging out or down and around there just talking to people and just noticing that I've been talking to you for a while. And this line hasn't moved 2 feet.
Well, it was nice, you know, and they had a sort of tucked away in there in a corner, so it was kind of a private thing, and Tyler was there, and he was snapping photos and everything. That was just great. Oh, now we're done with the trip, and this is turtle-centric stuff.
No. Quickly, I still just want to finish out my trip because it didn't end there. So the next morning on the 5th, I drove my rental car over to New York to an old friend's house. There's a veterinarian. Retired. He's getting downsizing his collection. We've been doing it for the past 6 years from like 4,000 turtles. Now it's down to just a few hundred turtles. And so I went there to collect genetic samples and just look at turtles and do stuff like that before the rest of them, you know, end up leaving sometime. So just this huge private turtle collection. And then go to the next slide.
Is this guy's house? Where are you? I mean,
this room with the big, all the blue or turquoise tubs. Yeah. That is for people that, people that aren't watching this. There are a bunch of huge, like lobster tanks is what they are.
Yeah.
And they're being used for turtles from all over the world. And he just had thousands and thousands of turtles going back to the 1970s.
Jeez. And
he's got all these aquariums, 150-gallon aquariums, 6 feet long, full of these snake neck turtles.
Yeah, I was just going to say, what's up with this long neck on this turtle? He seems
from Australia and New Guinea, the island of New Guinea, and a couple in South America. They're all in the southern hemisphere. They're only about 23 species or so.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
And so on the 7th, on Tuesday, I flew back and got back in the evening. So I drove all the way back to Hartford because that's where I flew in and out of.
Yeah.
And I flew out of there on Tuesday, got back, and then went straight into the field to do field work where I've been doing for 21 years on Kiowa Island, which is south of Charleston, a barrier island. One of the richest most expensive places to live in the entire United States. Wow. It's in the top like 5 or 6 places outside of a few like coastal New York areas and maybe one California area, but it's really, really expensive. And we've been doing work here, actually going on since 83. I've been doing it since 2003, so past 21 years. And we go out there and drag these big nets at low tide through these tidal marshes and catch that turtle that's over there, the diamondback terrapin. And so I did that for 3 days. So it's just a monitoring program to see how their populations are doing, which of course they're declining for a variety of reasons. But it's just a lot of fun getting out there and getting real muddy and getting cut up by oysters and catching sharks and stingrays and all kinds of other bycatch while we're catching these turtles.
Wait, did you say sharks? You're in the water. So this guy here in the bottom photo, he's practically up to his shoulders in the water, and there's sharks in this water?
We're swimming and treading sometimes. Oh. They get smaller, so we get like schools of little black tip reef sharks, and sometimes we get the bonnet heads, which are a type of shark that are only about 4 feet. And then sometimes we'll get like a real hammerhead shark, a small one.
Oh, God.
But never a really big one. I mean, theoretically, there could be bull sharks in there and other larger species, but we've never run into them.
Yikes.
Occasionally, an alligator. Sometimes really large southern stingrays that are about 3 feet across that are huge.
Oh, my God. I'd be out of that water so fast. I'd probably be out of that water so fast if a turtle came up to me, for crying out loud.
The oysters are the most dangerous thing out there. So if you fall on them wrong, you'll cut yourself really badly.
Ooh, oysters, huh? Sharp.
All right, so we're done with that, with the trip. That was my week, my past week. And I haven't actually had a day off in about 3 weeks now. I've just been going nonstop. And I have to work every day and just so much going on. But so this is different. This is my last turtle lesson of the day. this one was in here. I had it in here because it came up for May the 4th from my organization asking for a social media post about May the 4th. And so this is a turtle I thought of because years ago, a coworker of mine, her granddaughter was living here for a few years, and she was probably 12 or 13 when she first saw these turtles, this type of turtle. And the first thing that she said is, or she started calling this the Sith turtle.
Oh, it's all red and black.
You and our viewers, can see that at all. Does that make any sense? She just thought it looked like Darth Maul.
Yeah.
And called it the Sith turtle. And so, because all the red and black and the sharpness to it, I guess, and the lines, but, I just thought that I never thought of it. I never picked that up, but she did.
Yeah, it's the Darth Maul turtle, and he has a sort of an elongated neck as well.
Yes, and these turtles actually come from Japan, from the island. They're endemic to the island of Okinawa.
Wow.
And a couple of the tiny little satellite islands around there. So they're found nowhere else but right there, called the Ryukyu Island Black-Breasted Turtle.
Wow! And do you own one of these guys?
I do have a whole many of them.
Yeah,
They should have never left Japan.
Yeah,
they're considered a national treasure and they've been protected, but they get smuggled and shipped around the world, and they get confiscated from time to time, and that's generally how I've ended up with some of them.
The Darth Maul turtle.
Yes.
Yeah, awesome. The only thing he's missing are some horns on the back of his.
Yes, yeah, and there are none anymore really that have that, unfortunately. There used to be turtles that had these large horns coming off the back of their heads, but not anymore. They're all gone, long gone.
No, bummer.
Yeah.
Let's take a moment then to remember and appreciate the turtles with horns on them. Moment of silence.
The horned turtles, yes. They've been extinct for a while.
Oh, what a bummer.
Not in recent times, but thousands of years ago.
Oh, okay. So we don't even miss it, really.
You're right. We never knew. All we ever saw were bones and fossils.
Yeah, we don't know life with those horny turtles.
No. Maybe some early people lived with them, but yeah, it's been a long time since they've been gone.
All right, so let's go to the tattoo parlor.
All right, so now we're moving.
What is going on here? You're sitting on a table. You're wearing a clone trooper helmet.
But it should be. Yeah, they messed that. That shirt was messed up. It should have been a clone trooper helmet. But obviously from Full Metal Jacket.
Yeah.
The with the pin with a peace symbol, born to kill. And it says clone to kill.
Oh yeah. Right.
But this celebration. So I did want tattoos have come up recently in topics and conversation, Star Wars tattoos. And this is celebration six, I think.
Yeah, I recognize the badges.
5 and 6, there were the tattoo pavilion.
Yeah,
and this, you know, there were these books that were made.
Shane Turgeon's Force in the Flesh.
Yeah. So a volume 1 and a volume 2 that has all these really neat, I don't know if you can get these anymore, but that had all of the lots and lots of Star Wars art, flesh art in there. So really cool, nice books, lots of really neat photos if you're into that kind of stuff. And they would have the tattoo contest. So yeah, a couple of celebrations. I went ahead and got my Star Wars tattoos, and I had some before. I don't have a lot, but I have, you know, I have several, and I was just going to show them off here real quick. People asked me about them. So, this is, 2017.
Mm-hmm.
You're getting your leg done. I just want to point out in this slide here, you're getting a tattoo on your upper thigh.
Yeah.
And it looks like it's even going into spilling into like the inside of the thigh a little bit, you know, like, where things get really sensitive.
Yeah, it is. It's sensitive and close. Yeah, certainly. Yeah. But not as bad as some other places.
Yeah. You look cool as a cucumber as you're sitting there and she's giving you the tat.
Yep.
Yeah. This next one, I can't tell.
It's
your other leg. Okay.
Other leg on the outside, yes.
That looks like you're getting the Mandalorian Death Head.
That's a really old one. Actually, what I'm getting on that side is BT-1 and Dr. Aphra.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. And there is R2 and R5. So you have the matching pair.
Yeah, so that R2 is one of my favorite scenes in Star Wars.
With Leia in the hologram.
And the projection, the hologram, and also Leia putting the plans into R2, all that good stuff. So, yeah, I'm a big astromech fan and droid in general.
Oh, I love them. Oh, yeah. And it says, "You're my only hope."
Yeah.
Nice, nice. Say it loud, say it proud. Now, here's a whole collection of characters.
My pin-up style, and adult Ahsoka and Dr. Aphra and BT-1.
Ooh. Ooh, Ahsoka is really, she's letting it all hang out there.
And I had to bring the pinup style in a little bit.
Yeah. And this artwork, was this generated by the tattoo artist or did you give them something to work from?
That was from comics and some was fan art that I found. Yeah.
And Asajj also showing off a little more leg than she usually does.
Mm-hmm.
Very nice. And Dr. Aphra just looking like she just came out of the comic books.
Yes.
And then this, you have, instead of it saying Star Wars, it says Start Wars.
Yes.
Start Wars.
And I'll give you the background on that. So yes. I did that obviously for Star Wars. And I kind of last minute did Start Wars for a variety of reasons. One, it's because that's what people do. That's like human nature from the most primitive cultures to the most advanced civilizations. All we ever do is start wars all the time, everywhere. There's always a war going on, multiple wars somewhere. So that was for the human nature part of it. But it's also a response to Natalie Portman. I don't know if you remember, a long time ago, she did an interview and wore a short shirt that said "Stop Wars." And so I thought I would just turn that around on her.
Wow. So from Stop Wars to Start Wars, you know, I think like for a guy like you who thinks about that stuff, it must have really kind of hit a nerve with you when Baylan Skull was lamenting that very thing in the Ahsoka series.
Yeah.
He was saying, you know, the Jedi, the Sith, one defeats the other, and then it starts all over again.
Cycle of it all.
Well, I think that's, you know, primarily what he was saying when he was making that statement. So, and then Nat, of course, she made it into a shirt. Mm-hmm. Was there a reason why was there any specific reason given why?
I believe it just simple, the protesting of wars. It was, it wasn't long after she did the prequels, or about that same time. I can't remember exactly, but it was, you know, 20 years ago.
Yeah, I found a picture of her wearing this shirt.
It is, yeah.
Yeah. Look at all that eye makeup she has on. You thought, yes. You thought Queen Amidala abused the makeup cabinet. Oh, look at that. Stop wars. Yeah. And then you have your answer to that, which is start wars. Yes. So chew on that, Nat.
That's right.
I better be careful. She'll be calling. I don't think Nat monitors my work here on Patreon.
It doesn't seem so, right? Just in the regular show?
Just in the regular show, yeah. She obviously is not a supporter. Yes. Definitely not an RFR VIP, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. She could be if she wanted to, but every time I try bringing it up, she changes the subject.
Right.
So here we have infamous, this is on your leg.
Yeah, my right front leg, yes. And,
yeah, the infamous Mandalorian... Yep. Death skull, mythosaur skull,
yeah,
whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, whatever it is. I mean, it doesn't look like the mythosaur necessarily that we see now in the Mandalorian,
right?
And skulls that we've seen. So whatever it is, the signet of Boba Fett, you know.
Yeah, it just has that, you know, that sort of Old West kind of vibe.
Yeah,
which sort of surrounds the character of Boba Fett all the time. Yeah. Ooh, explain this. It looks like a paw print.
So, yes, this is a story. This is a dog of mine that died in 2012. Although it's one I regret, or I never kind of forgive myself for, because she was 16, a big dog, and she was going downhill. But I had to go to Myanmar, Burma, in Southeast Asia for 10 days for something. And I thought she had enough. She still had enough in her for me to go and do that, and while I was gone, she went downhill and crashed, and I wasn't there for her final moments, unfortunately. And I should have done it before I left, and I never did it myself. So that's her paw print that I took, before. And what I did is I cremated her, and I took the ashes and a mortar and pestle and ground them down into real fine powder and mixed it with the ink. And tattooed the ashes and the ink into there, and then wrote her name in Arabesh, which is M-I-N-K-S, Minx.
Wow, that's amazing. I've never heard of anyone doing that before. Have you ever heard of anyone doing that before with their dog's ashes?
When I did it, but later on, someone thought it was really cool, and someone asked me about it, how to do it, and then we were looking online, and there are companies that actually will prepare the ashes for you, of loved ones or whoever, you know, any ashes, to do that and put it in the ink already and send it to you.
That's amazing. That is really amazing.
I didn't know about that. This was back in 2012. I just did it myself.
Wild. Absolutely wild. Oh, now what's going on here?
Now here you have Chewbacca's wife, Mala, of course.
That is not Mala. That is some sort of, I don't know.
It's an ancient hominid. That's Lucy. Yeah.
Right. Okay.
That's from a model at the American Museum of Natural History, but she looks enough like a Wookiee. I threw her in there for fun.
Right. So explain what Lucy is again. It's like they took a skeleton and they sort of...
It's a fossil skeleton of a hominid, a type of human, like these relatives like Neanderthals and Homo erectus and Habilis and all these other species of hominids that exist. And this is one of the oldest and ancient known of the hominid line, Australopithecus afarensis. So considered an early ancestor of hominids.
And braless.
Oh, yeah. They didn't have any clothes back then. Just fur. Over time, lost the fur.
Oh my God! Is this is the most painful photo I've ever seen in my life.
This is my everyone's favorite. All the tattoos I have, this is everyone's favorite.
I had no idea. He's pulling his front lip down, his lower lip, and on the inside of the lip, it says Slayer, and it's a tattoo done like the logo for the band Slayer. That's dedication right there.
That has been there for 25 years. Wow. Most of inner finger tattoos and toes and inner lips, they usually disappear within a relatively short period of time because the skin cells are constantly renewing and shedding. But that has been there like that for 25 years and still is.
Oh,
and I tried to do lightsabers, Luke and Vader's lightsabers on the inside of my fingers. Ouch. And I've never been able to get the color to stay in the blade. It always falls out.
That is crazy. Here, let me get a closer look at your lightsabers there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I guess they faded a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, quite a bit, actually. But your lip. Unbelievable. Look at that. Yikes. Yeah. On the inside of the lip. How in the world did you stay still and go through? I mean, you just must be one of those guys who really enjoys pain, you know?
No, actually, it wasn't as painful as some other places. Where wow. It's like over the ribs or over like the ankle bone or the top of the foot. There are places that are much more painful. And that was really quick. It was just as long as like writing those letters. So it only took a minute or two.
Oh, okay.
When I was holding the lip, I could feel the gun, the needle hitting my thumbs.
Yikes. Oh, God. And how long did it take to heal?
Almost instantly because it's in your mouth.
Oh, I guess. Yeah, I guess. That's crazy. Oh, okay. So you said you like Astromex a lot.
Yeah.
And in this photo, we see Astromex.
These two photos have been in there since the first Q&A I did. I've just never had enough time to get to them. And I just wanted to share some of my kind of favorite moments of celebrations, my favorite parts about celebrations. And I've never gotten a chance to do it really. So I just threw a few of these pictures back in here for that. But yeah, the droid building hall is one of my absolute favorite things to look at when I'm there.
Yeah.
It is just amazing what those people create, and something I've always wanted to do and just have never taken the time to do it. But I just love walking through these galleries and looking at all these things that these people have built.
Yeah. The droid room is always a big hit at those conventions. Do you remember which one this was taken at?
Either 5 or 6, I believe.
And here's another setup. This is probably in the 501st room.
And when they do this kind of stuff, they set up these whole these life-size dioramas, basically. They'll do like the Jawa room, you know, where they're taking it. I mean, it's so many cool things. I love the setups that they do.
Yeah, amazing creativity. In this shot, you see a snowtrooper with that big E-Web cannon and 3PO and R2 in the background on the Hoth base. And that's the scene right before 3PO pulls the warning Wampas sign off the door. It was a deleted scene. Yeah. And here it is being fully realized in three dimensions as a giant life-size diorama.
Time and care that people put into this stuff. I mean, just the detail. It's just amazing.
Yeah, for sure. And then here you are. And what a great backdrop. You're sitting with a muddied R2. And like a box filled with Luke's gear on Dagobah. Is that just a photo in the background, right?
Yeah. It's a tarp or something. A printout of like one of those backdrop things.
But still, it looks great because the lighting is so good.
Yeah, that was in the droid hall setup. Like hell yeah, I'm gonna take a seat here with R2.
No, that's great. Great photo. And here's R2QT.
KT.
Or KT, that's what it is.
You know the story behind this droid?
Yeah. It was a tribute to Albin Johnson's daughter. Albin, founder of the 501st. His daughter passed away at a very young age. And so they created this droid while she was, I think it was cancer, and she was going through chemo and all that. And this was sort of her counterpart, her sidekick, when she was going through all of that stuff. Hasbro actually made it into an action figure, and it's appeared in various Star Wars programming over the years too. So
they're from here. They're an hour down the road, hour and a half down the road in Columbia, South Carolina. That's where the 501st started, here in South Carolina. So I've always liked that droid too, and the story behind it.
I remember the first time I saw fans dressed as screen accurate Star Wars characters. Mm-hmm. And it was at the premiere, the Chicago premiere of the special editions back in 97. Mm-hmm. And I was standing in line behind Boba Fett. And I remember still just like staring at that rocket jetpack on his back going, oh my God, this is unbelievable. And it was shortly after that I started to hear about costuming groups in the 501st, et cetera. And now you see them so often at events and conventions, you almost take them for granted. But they add a lot of flavor to the events, and it's always cool to see those characters up close.
Yes, it is. And after Eric from Phoenix did a slideshow on a Q&A at some point, and you know, he found your brother in the background of one of his
that's right.
I went through all of my photos again, see if I could find anybody that I know from this.
Eric. Yeah, it was just a random photo, and he didn't even know that was Billy Mack in the background, but there he was. Really funny also is Chris Sorrentino, Baby Belushi, he was showing off some photos that he took at earlier Star Wars celebrations. And he took a picture with Dave Filoni. And I can see myself in the background of that shot. And this was years before me and Chris ever crossed paths. Wow. But I remember that morning, I was walking around the convention center with Filoni before the doors had opened up. And I was in there probably because of official picks, and that we were part of that crew when we were back in the day, and we were doing shows out of the autograph hall, so we were able to go in early, which was a great perk. Nowadays, if they let me in early, you know, it would be great, but I would never take advantage of it because I always show up at these conventions like a couple hours after the doors open now, you know. I'm not the first one in anymore. And I you know, there's good and bad with that, but I just don't put any pressure on myself to stand in line.
Older, you've kind of done that. You've put yourself through it, all those long lines and making sure you're the first one in there to try to get what you want or see what you want. And unless it's something. You know, when you kind of been there, done that, it's not as important to just be rushing and put yourself through all that stress.
Yeah. You know, well, I mean, for me, my relationship with the conventions, it always used to be about the panels and the dealer room and all of that stuff, like the convention centric stuff. But over the years, the real draw of these events to me are the people. Yes. And so I know the people are going to be there all day. I stroll in an hour or two late, you know?
Yeah.
So, and then plus, you know, Swank keeps me up all night with the cigars and the whiskey and stuff. So,
yeah, he was the last one down. He was both nights, Friday and Saturday. He was up all the way to the end.
What a trooper.
Yes.
So, this photo, I recognize this is part of the Rancho Obi-Wan exhibit.
One of my favorite exhibits. I mean, just Rancho Obi-Wan in general. I've never been there, but these little mini exhibits they do at Celebration. But this one in particular, I don't know. It's just so much cool stuff. The bedroom scene from the 70s. And it's just so cool.
They just jammed a bunch of memorabilia into what is a, reconstruction of a kid's room from the 70s, all the way down to the green shag carpeting. Yep.
All of it.
Which we had in our family room and in our basement, the green shag carpeting.
Yeah. There's so many things in there that you recognize, the bed sheets and the poster. I think that Darth Vader poster is the one that was on the door in Poltergeist.
That's classic. That was on my bedroom wall, that Darth Vader. It's called the Disco Vader. Some people call it that. And it's just a really great shot of Darth Vader. I think the Factors Company is the one who was selling that back in the day. And with all the merchandise and everything that was released for Star Wars. Oh, look, they even have one of those Walgreens lightsabers on the floor with the flashlight and the plastic tube. You know, unlicensed, of course, you know, but George couldn't stop people from selling flashlights with plastic tubes on them as long as they didn't say it was from Star Wars.
Plastic color adapters that you could put in there.
Yeah. Oh, did they have those? Could you change the color? I thought you could only buy one specific color.
You could make them. Some did probably. I seem to vaguely remember some. They're just like the cellophane. You could just make it yourself, cut it, and put it over the light.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so. I guess so. You know, if you were, you know, enterprising, I wouldn't do that as a kid because I would end up breaking the saber somehow. You know, anytime I tried to modify something, I ended up breaking it because I didn't know what the hell I was doing. Mm-hmm. But you see a lot of good stuff from the era in this room. And those mm-hmm. Factors posters were really, because as I was saying, we're so used to like just a flood of Star Wars merchandise. But when the movie first came out in 77, there was no real merch to go along with it. So the earliest stuff they could get out there are bootleg lightsabers and posters, puzzles. That was it.
The wreck of the LPs. Yeah. War One, the Star Wars Story LP came out, I think. And then kitchens, small stuff that was easily made and just slap a sticker on it, basically.
Yeah, that's how that went. But what a great exhibit. Rancho Obi-Wan, of course. They have this same exhibit set up as a permanent display in the museum now. Mm-hmm. So if you ever make it out to Petaluma, California, visit Steve Sansweet's Rancho Obi-Wan, you'll see this again. And I think there's even more crap in there now than in this photo. And so RanchoObiWan.org is the place you want to go.
Got to get there at some point.
Yeah, you do. You do. And it is a bucket list thing for me to have an RFR hangout there, mm-hmm. you know, similar to what we did in Bristol, you know, live mm-hmm. show.
Yeah,
hang out at Rancho Obi-Wan, followed by an after party.
That would be great.
Yeah, so stay tuned. One of these days, you know, we were starting to really get serious about it when the pandemic hit, and it's just taken us time to, you know, to redirect our thoughts in that direction. But mm-hmm. I'm down for it. So hopefully sooner than later.
And then, I really enjoy seeing the progressive art installations and works that happen throughout the 4 days.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whether it's these big chalk drawings they were doing for the Clone Wars. They did a couple of them a couple times in a row. And I think it was the same guy. And, the Lego builds and the diorama builds, you know, I like watching the progression of these things over the 4 days. That's really, really kind of cool.
Yeah, I remember watching this guy do this illustration. It was the sidewalk chalk artist. Mm-hmm. And so he was sitting on the floor making this giant piece of art featuring Clone Wars characters like Savage, Oppress, Ventress, Count Dooku, sort of his tribute to some of the dark side villains of the Clone Wars. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and it was probably, you know, consistent with what was being aired on TV at the time this convention took place. So, I remember that one. And here we have Darth Talon, some cosplayers, Darth Talon and Dirge from the Clone Wars micro series.
That was a cool character in that micro series, and don't seem to see him around very often in cosplay. But
yeah, right.
I really, the cosplaying is always fun. I'm not I don't dress up and do anything, but mm-hmm. I do enjoy seeing it.
and the
work that people put into these things.
The only dressing up I've ever done is I have a Chewbacca coat.
Yeah.
And I put that thing on, put the hood up, instant Chewbacca. It's uncanny. It's uncanny. All right. And then, and here's one of your favorite scenes from A New Hope.
You get impromptu scenes while you're walking around, just people doing stuff. I think just a lady walking by. It wasn't a purposeful setup, I don't think.
But she's dressed as Leia with the hood up, and she's reaching over to R2 as if she's putting the Death Star plans into his little mail slot.
Mm-hmm.
And that's always fun. And that's something, you know, I do with R2 when I see him sometimes. I'll just kind of bend over and act like I'm sticking something into that little slot. Oh, and here's a little girl inside an R2 shell. I mean, it looks like your typical R2 Builders Club sort of construction, but it's just a hollowed out R2, so a child could fit in there, much like Kenny Baker fit into the original R2.
There's clearly some electronics because there's lights on there, and then it has the metal hinges to lift open the dome to get in and out. So someone put some care into that one.
Wow. I wish I was small enough to fit inside an R2. Here we have some more cosplayers, Ahsoka, Obi-Wan, and Grievous. And the Grievous is always impressive.
Yeah, I mean, the person that made this, how they kind of cloaked themselves behind it, you know, with the costume itself and run this thing around it. And I always enjoy seeing people that look like this Kenobi here. I mean, the kind of vaguely look like they don't have to do much to look like what they're dressing up as.
Yeah, the Ahsoka could use a little help, although that's okay. Yes.
Yeah,
that's okay. But the Obi-Wan does look really good in that picture. And then, oh, here's some of my favorites. Garandan, Rancor Keeper, and a little Rancor.
a Rancor puppet that it looks like he made out of, what's that stuff called? I'm drawing a blank.
Latex, maybe, or some rubberized.
Rubberized latex, yeah.
And, those are very impressive. Oh, there's a good Saw Gerrera with the metal foot with Captain Rex.
Old Captain Rex, Rebels Captain Rex. These people, they already look like who they're supposed to be. That's the best part.
Yeah, absolutely. Whoops, I lost my slideshow here. Let me get that back. Oh, and there's a Wampa. Just a Wampa just standing around, you know, kind of looking for trouble.
Impressive, thing to walk around in a convention all day.
Yeah. Jeez. The length some of these people go to. Yeah. And then you have a little Leia, a slave Leia, and some weird Sith. What's he? Oh, he's the Predator from the films. He's a Sith Predator with the Darth Maul tattoos.
Yeah, these mashup things these people do are always interesting. So you have the Predator, Darth Maul Sith blend.
Actually, he's cosplaying as the Japanese Sith Turtle, which may not have known. He looks a little like the Predator, but he's actually a Sith Turtle.
Yes.
And what is going on here? It's Freddy, Jason from the Friday the 13th. Mm-hmm. What's he wearing?
Jason.
Snowtrooper Jason. It makes no sense at all.
No, because it was Friday the 13th, so this guy thought he was going to be clever. And got his machete. And it says today is Friday the 13th, which it was at that celebration. So there he is, walking around as a Snowtrooper Jason.
That's a stretch right there.
Yes.
I've seen a lot of crazy mashups before, but that one is near the top of the list of crazy. Oh, I spoke too soon, because here is an alien stormtrooper, alien from the, James, the Ridley Scott's James Cameron movies. You know, Cameron did the second one. So.
Yes.
Aliens.
So it's just a head. You got the alien, the xenomorph head on a regular human stormtrooper body. And I don't know what he's doing to this kid.
The xenomorph. I like how you instantly call it the xenomorph. Because I always call it the alien from Alien. Yeah. Yeah. But when you call it the xenomorph, that really takes it up a notch. And I remember reading that in like old star logs back from the day, mm-hmm. where they mm-hmm. would refer to the thing as the xenomorph. But I can't recall, in the original film, do they actually refer to it via dialogue as a xenomorph? I don't think they do.
I think they do, no.
I don't think, it's just one of those things nerds like us all know.
Yes.
It's a xenomorph. Shut up. Oh, here's Bender from Futurama as R2.
Yeah, the Bender R2.
That's pretty clever. Now, that one works. I think that one works. He's got the R2 dome on top of his head. Then it's Bender. And then his, torso is R2 again. But
it's all Bender, mm-hmm. along with a clone trooper. And oh, this sad sack. You see him at every show. Overweight super fan wearing Leia's metal bikini, standing by himself in front of the convention center. This is Orlando 2017.
Yeah.
Which, just between you and me, was my least favorite of all the celebrations.
Yeah, it wasn't. That was the first year that it was like overly crowded. Yeah. And just couldn't do anything. Everything was just gone. You couldn't stand in a line forever for nothing. I mean, it was a pain in the butt getting around in there waiting. I was getting up at like 4 o'clock in the morning and going down to the line and sitting there for hours until 10 o'clock to get in.
Oh.
It was just sitting down. I bought a folding lawn chair and we're just hanging out there for hours with people.
Jeez.
But
this guy's a real piece of work standing in front of the convention center. They're just like, how come nobody's coming up to take photos with me? He wonders.
Yeah. I'll bring you back to reality with the next one, though.
And that is Elvis Trooper with Slave Leia's at the Jabba display.
Mm-hmm.
Now, look at the pose on him.
I know.
His name is Ken Tarleton, and we've known him for years. And I think he largely has retired that Elvis Trooper persona. Mm. I haven't seen him dressed up in the garb for a long time, but I think he debuted at one of those Indianapolis celebrations, like 2 or 3. And that got him a lot of attention. That was, you know, right when cosplaying was starting to find its feet and start to run. And he was one of the very first mashups I can recall, Elvis Trooper. Me and Swank put him on the spot once and made him sing like Elvis, and it was a train wreck. So, I mean, you got to put your money where your mouth is, man.
Was it on? Was it recorded or just in front of you guys?
I think it is a recording. I probably can retrieve it, but I'm not going to.
No,
because I remember it was kind of messy. It was kind of messy. He was really good at the thank you very much, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But when push came to shove and you put a microphone in front of him, start playing music, don't expect a performance. Yeah. So, and here's a really attractive Leia in the metal bikini and an Ula. But
it's always nice just to see people like this walking around.
Sure. Yeah, it is nice, isn't it?
Yes.
Especially in places like Florida and stuff.
Yes.
We don't get cosplaying like that in Chicago very often.
Chicago, no.
No.
You have like 3 days a year that you can do that.
Yeah, right. So, well, that's the end of the slideshow, and what a slideshow it was. So, good job. It was looks like you've had a lot of fun at these things. When was the last Star Wars celebration you attended?
17. I tried to get tickets for 19, for 2019 Chicago, but they were sold out in like seconds, basically.
Yeah.
At least 4 day passes, and it's
such a scene now. I mean, back in the day, could buy tickets day of.
I know. You could buy tickets almost all the way up to the damn thing, and they were sold out. But I was also worried about Chicago in terms of how cold it would be, and it did snow, I think, that time.
It snowed so bad, Swank's flight got pushed back to the next day.
Wow.
It snowed so hard, and he was grumbling, "Oh, this town, I can't ever catch a break when I come, blah, 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 blah." It's like, settle down, Cleveland. I remember these things. Swank occasionally will be insulting to the Chicago area, and I always remember when he does. Like the time I showed him what the Chicago flag was, he goes, "That looks like something from a banana republic." I'm like, "Oh, you son of a..." because that's a symbol you see all over the city and stuff, and most people think it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So he got snowed in. I remember watching video of Ashley Eckstein, who splits her time between Florida and California. Mm-hmm. I watching her go to the car as there was just a little,
just a light dusting of snow in the air, you know? And she went running to the car like asteroids and acid were flying, falling from the sky. It was like running for her life to get into a car. I get it, with the hair and everything, but you still, I mean, yeah. it's not gonna hurt it. It's not gonna hurt you. And when people like start panicking over snow and things like that, that leads to a lot of problems because people rush, they have accidents, it's all kinds of stuff. You just gotta take it all in stride. It's only nature, but. Put me in Florida, and I don't know how you suckers can handle the heat there in the summer. That's the one. I mean, it's so brutal there. You feel the swamp, you know, fill up in your underpants the second you walk outside.
You do.
But you guys get used to it.
You get used to it. And, I watch so many people move down here to the southeast from the north, and we're complaining when it's, like, November and 65 degrees. And they're like, what the hell is wrong with you? But always if they do a full year, they do on their second winter or third winter, then they start, getting acclimated and realize and understand why we complain when it's below 60.
Oh, it gets the way it gets. Yep. But you
really never get used to it, though. I mean, some people have to leave. They just, the heat is too much for them.
Oh, listen, if I could leave the Chicago area, I would have been out of here a long time ago. My roots run too deep. Yeah. And I the family and the jobs and the family with the jobs and everything. So I could never consider, I just once in my life would like to go through a full year where I don't have to deal with a winter. I mean, just once can I do that? And I've come close. There were times I was living part-time in L.A., but it'd be there and I come back here and I go back there and stuff. And with this radio show I was working with, we were like part-time LA and then we became more full-time in LA. It was a real crazy situation between two cities, LA and Chicago. But I never was able to stay out there for a full year. Mm-hmm. We always came back for the holidays, so there's just no escaping it. No escaping it.
Well, maybe someday you'll get to be a snowbird of some kind,
I would love that. Love that.
Yeah, you never know. But yeah, listening to your stories and everything, you have so much roots there and connections, and you just know all the history and everything. You know it really well.
Yeah, well, that's how you are with your hometowns. What you lived, but just 1 year. We got lucky when we went to Florida a couple of weeks ago. The weather was just outstanding.
Mm-hmm. It was the coldest week of the year, basically. That when you went that up here too in South Carolina, we were freezing.
Perfect. It was perfect. It couldn't have been the coldest. It was. In the afternoon, it would get up to the upper 80s, but in the evening, it was hoodie weather.
Yeah,
for most of the evenings, and then I guess it's really started to take off in the last couple of weeks. It started, more in the 90s, probably a little more humidity.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, being in Bristol, it's my fault too, is I hate wearing pants. I'm always in shorts. People at 45 out, and I'm sitting on the patio out there with no fire and. Just keep on having some drinks and just power through it.
Yeah.
I was cold. And so that Friday and Saturday night, Sunday, holy cow, that was freezing. I got up to 50 that day.
And it was raining. Only 50? It was raining. It was raining. Right. Yeah. We got out of town right before the storms hit.
Yeah.
But I guess it was cool.
Yes. I mean, for some people, that's a nice temperature, 50 and sunny.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, it was, I don't mind it. I don't mind it. That's what it's going to be like in my area tomorrow. Mm. It got up to 80 today, but we don't want to talk about weather here on the old Q&A. That gets kind of old real fast.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Sure, but it is fun to compare notes every once in a while.
Yeah, yeah.
So are you looking forward to the Acolyte? Are you someone who has a hang up about it? Are you someone who's open minded
about anything, even if I don't like it, you know, or I'm not totally on board with it, but
yeah.
I'm looking forward to seeing it. I'm really looking forward to, you know, like you've said in the past, I'm always rooting for Star Wars.
Yes.
And even if it's not great in my mind, I know that it's great for some other people. Mm-hmm. And it's always, no matter what it is in Star Wars, it's bringing in some people from somewhere that are new, and that's their first Star Wars and they love it. And for me, I'm looking forward to it in a sense. It's a new part of the timeline. I'm a little worried about some of the things I've heard from the creators and how this is going to be different than any other Star Wars, and we're going to turn it on its head and the whole concept of the Force and this and that. But yeah, we'll see how it goes. I'm not going to judge until I see it.
There has been some new footage released, though, that I think makes it look really, it's revealing more about what the plot is going to be like. And it seems Star Wars-y to me. You know, mm-hmm. there's assassination attempts on Jedi, and mm-hmm. the Jedi go looking into it, and they discover that there's an assassin hunting them down who is associated with the Sith. She's mm-hmm. the acolyte. It seems interesting to me. I hope there's some real twists and turns in the story. I hope that the stakes are high and the motivations of the characters are a little more clear to the audience than they've been in things like the Ahsoka series or even Andor to a degree.
I really kind of have a somewhat of a fresh slate to start in a timeline that we, even though there are characters from what we know that are still that are alive back then, it's really a whole new thing for them to work with.
Yeah. So I'm going to be, I'm going to take it at face value and I'm going to, sum up the story that's being presented to us. But,
And I know people complain about some people complain sometimes about the whole so-called fan service thing. And personally, I like that if it's done okay. I mean, I would love a cameo or two of some familiar characters and the Acolyte.
Right, right. The only time I really hated any sort of things that happen in Star Wars that can be considered fan service is when Jyn Erso and Cassian Andor bump into Walrus Man and Dr. Evazan on Jeddah. And they basically have like a very similar back and forth like Walrus Man and Luke had. And I was like, come on, guys. We can do better than that. And the characters like wearing the same clothes and stuff. Guys, we can do better than that. I mean, but otherwise, I really love things like Easter eggs and cameo appearances or callbacks to, things from the canon or even outside the canon, expanded universe. Yep.
Absolutely, yeah.
So I'm hoping the show has a bit of that. They've been teasing that. So it says there'll be something there for hardcore fans who like to connect the dots between different stories, and so that stuff will be obvious. And the whole idea of it being sort of a mystery about who is trying to hunt down the Jedi and then eventually going on to, hunt the hunter, that to me sounds great. The visuals you see in the trailers of multiple Jedi igniting their sabers, that's something we really haven't seen much since Attack of the Clones.
Right.
Yeah, so and some of the special effects I've seen look real good too. So,
I guess this isn't put on the volume at all. It's all like real sets and on location, right? Yeah,
yeah. It was shot. It was shot in the UK, and like Andor, it was shot. They don't have the LED shooting stage there like they do in California, where I think they have multiple stages now. Mm-hmm. you know, the stagecraft or volume, whatever you want to call it. And I don't have a hang up with that either. You know, a lot of people have a hang up. The problem is once you know how the sausage is made, then you could really start picking apart the ingredients. And that's the thing. The old Lucasfilm was very excited about having this new technology. And so they made it very crystal clear to the audiences about what was going on behind the scenes. And I love the behind the scenes stuff, but sometimes a little too much information is bad for your sense of wonder. And it's, you know, it's the magician telling you how the trick gets done. And so once the magician does that, then everyone's an expert on how it gets created and everyone has an opinion. And that's happened with the volume to a degree. I don't see it being any worse than the green screen stuff we've been watching for years. We grew up with green screen. And, you know, and green screen evolved, kept evolving more and more, where they were adding all of these computer-generated elements to it, and it just the technology outgrew the green screen. And so they created this way where the actors can actually see their environments. It's not just surrounded by greenness. And I think that helps create better performances and helps create a little more clarity as far as the set pieces and action and all of that stuff goes and story. So, but you know, again, once people know how it's done, then all of a sudden it's going to be for them or not for them. And they become experts. What I always say, you know what I always say, Turtle Wars, I say, stop wars. Me and Nat together, united, we say stop wars.
Yes.
I just wanted to make reference to that because I wanted to look at Nat for a minute. So, all right, she's gone. Okay, yeah. With her stop wars shirt.
And historically, I mean, with Star Wars, we would always get a lot of the behind-the-scenes stuff. I mean, a ton of behind-the-scenes stuff, especially as time went on. And then with Disney, we're getting very little until The Mandalorian. Really none until The Mandalorian.
Right. Yeah. They had to sell their new technology and let it be known that they had this thing.
Yeah.
It was, I think on the Solo film was the first time it started getting utilized, but that was largely just to be like looking out of windows on starships and stuff, as opposed to composing the entire set, which is what they started doing with The Mandalorian. I think they did so, you know, they executed that really well. And I think they pulled off quite a miracle with all of that stuff. And so, but you know, people just want to rip on it. Sometimes, you know, I mean, it's not 100%, of course, you know, sometimes it can look a little phony, I guess, but I mean, you know, can you come up with a better way to do it? Well, practical effects, you know, for the way audiences have been conditioned over these years, if Hollywood reverted to all nothing but practical effects like it used to be in the old days, people would lose their minds, you know? Yeah. They would just lose their minds.
Yes.
And when you say practical effects, I think that also means green screen too. So you remove that, because that was the big knock on the prequels, is that it was all shot in front of green screen. Where's the practical? I don't know. Especially with superhero movies and stuff, they can lean on the computer generated stuff way too much. I think it all works best when it's used to accentuate and build upon things that are happening that are being shot in the camera. But I watched that Aquaman movie, the sequel, and I thought it was okay. It was fine, but it was nothing special. But that might have well been an animated film. It was, every scene was just flooded with special effects, computer generated effects. And you know, you can see through that stuff sometimes when it hits you upside the head like that. So
it's nice to have practical effects too, or in a mixture, like you said. And it's, but you know, sometimes the practical effects, I mean, a puppet looks like a puppet, you know, you're not really pulling it off.
Right. But we need reality.
We need
Leia in a metal bikini to come back and dance on stage with Ula. And that's our reality here. No, I'm just kidding. But, it was just a photo. I wanted to look at that photo of the Leia again. Cause I mean, really, what a, you know, without getting too insane about it. It was one of the most attractive Princess Leia cosplayers I've ever seen in my life. So
yeah.
So might have to track her down. Fire Swank, get myself a new co-host.
So I guess we also had Tales of the Empire come up recently. We had a great long after show about that, and that was interesting. I like the episodes. I'm not sure which set I like better. I mean, I have a lot more history with Barriss, of course, and I've been wanting to see how she turned out. I haven't watched it other than at the hotel. I haven't taken the time to watch it on our good TV.
Yeah.
I'm not exactly sure how I feel about that last episode, though, of Barriss's arc. I need to watch that again.
Oh, with the fourth sister in the cave getting It provided a bit of closure to Barriss's story, though.
Yeah,
it let us know where she ended up.
Yeah,
and how she did stay true to the light side all the way to the end. Mm-hmm. A lot of people get mad that it's another character flirting with the dark side and then repenting and doing it before Darth Vader did.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I mean, the galaxy's a big place and 10,000 Jedi, you know, some of them we even see in the Clone Wars series, we see that Admiral Krell, who was a Jedi, he definitely leans toward the dark side.
Not messing around at all.
But he doesn't repent.
No,
he doesn't come back to the light.
Nope.
So some people get mad. They think Anakin Skywalker is the only one who had the capability to do that. But, I'm not going to be so precious about things like that.
No.
You know, or they'll quote Yoda. They say, once you travel down the dark path forever, it controls your destiny.
Right.
And, you know, I would push back and say, I don't believe Barriss fully committed. I don't believe she fully committed. She did some crappy things, but I think she did it motivated by the light side of the Force. She felt like the Jedi were being agents of evil and tools of the dark side, you know. I mean, she believed that because of all the events of the Clone Wars.
Yeah.
She's kind of right in a way, you know.
Yeah.
Her suspicions proved to be rather true, but not so obvious to everyone. And then the Jedi fall, and the Jedi fall at the hand of one of their own, Anakin Skywalker. And she's then locked in a prison and offered a second chance, a chance at freedom. And she takes it and taps into anger a few times.
Mm-hmm.
But does she let herself get fully consumed by the dark side? I don't see that happening. No. Luke Skywalker got tempted by anger and acted out. Anakin, before he became Darth Vader, was tempted, but I guess that goes without saying. But I don't think Barriss fully committed to the dark side. And you see, when she essentially is taking her first mission as an Inquisitor, she's with the Force Sister, and they go to that village, and they're hunting the Jedi. And you know, Barriss is definitely more of the velvet glove compared to the Fourth Sister's iron fist. And when that iron fist reveals itself, Barriss is shocked. And she doesn't want to have anything to do with that crap. So I don't think she fully committed.
No, I mean, she was questioning what was going on, and she didn't want to have anything to do with it, like you said. Otherwise, she would have just wiped those people out, too.
Yeah. The only time we really see her exhibit the dark side is Anakin confronts her, and she fights Anakin with Asajj Ventress's sabers. But that's more out of self-preservation. She didn't start the attack. She's trying to BS her way out of it. But it was the sabers, which you know, was the big evidence that proved her to be guilty.
That was a pretty fight as well.
Yeah. Oh, that was great. That was great.
Yeah.
Season 5 of the Clone Wars, last episode of the season. And then she reveals to the court that she thought the Jedi were slipping and they weren't being consistent with the light side as she saw it. And then when she does exhibit the dark side, it's when she taps in her anger, it's dueling with the Inquisitor.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, she almost has to fight fire with fire in that situation. And she does, you know, kill that other Jedi too. She throws him down the pit.
Yeah. Yes.
But again, out of self-preservation.
Yeah, right.
She's using it. Yoda says himself, a Jedi uses the Force for knowledge and defense.
Mm-hmm.
And she was using it to defend herself. And then the Inquisitor kept egging her on to attack, and she does. And so she taps in the dark side then. But then that's it. She goes on that mission with the Fourth Sister and turns her back on the dark side. As soon as she gets in deep enough, she realizes this is not for me. So she never got fully consumed by it like Anakin did. She didn't denounce her former life like Anakin did and completely embrace the dark side. That's what makes his story special, is the fact he was able to walk away from it.
Yep.
That's what I got
after, on. After kneeling before the Emperor and pledging himself to him for whatever deeds needed to be done.
I could tell there's a lot still to be said about these episodes. And mm-hmm. we did a 3-hour after show.
Yes.
And there's still a lot to be said about those episodes. That to me indicates that Tales of the Empire was well done and compelling enough.
Yeah.
You know, after a 3-hour after show, I feel like I could do another 3 hours.
Mm-hmm.
I think it even surprised Jason. Because going into it, he always is like kind of a Debbie Downer. He's, let's see if we could get 2 hours out of this conversation. I said, are you kidding me? I guarantee you we'll go long tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Because there were 6 different episodes to break down. And I had a lot to say about all of them. Mm-hmm. And Jason, as it turned out, had a lot to say about them too. So,
yes, I'm really glad that you guys posted, because he on Saturday night, he said it was going to be on Wednesday. And I had, after I got out of the marsh catching turtles, I had to go straight to a concert with a friend. And so I was going to miss it. But then
yeah,
didn't watch till Thursday. So I was happy about that.
That was the original plan. Yeah. We try to stick with the Wednesday nights to either do a live stream or record a show. And last week, I just, you know, I just wanted more time with the show, because like you, I only watched it in the hotel room that one time.
Yeah.
And I spent the previous night going through the first part, the Morgan Elsbeth stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I had a ton of notes and it was getting late. And I said, well, I'm just going to have to put off really digging deep into the Barriss Offee stuff until, you know, the hours leading up to the show. But then when I was working the next day, I realized I had so much stuff on my plate and everything that I really wanted to have a fresh, clean slate going into that breakdown. So we moved it to Thursdays. It's nice to have that flexibility when life gets in the way, you know?
Yep.
And most people seem pretty happy about it, because there are many in the regular crew who can't make those Wednesday nights,
uh-huh.
but they can make a Thursday. So yeah. That's a bone to throw to them. And then I posted the show on Friday and it didn't publish for some reason. I didn't find out till Saturday morning.
Yeah, I noticed that.
It was supposed to go out Friday afternoon and it didn't go out till Saturday morning. And I didn't even know. It was stuck in this queue to be like scheduled to be released.
Okay.
Which is just ridiculous. I mean, just publish the damn thing. So I went back and I took care of that. And so just pulling the curtain back a little bit on the way things go here. You know, sometimes I have good intentions and I plan to stick on the schedule. And then I find out a day later that something went wrong.
Well, you had a lot of stuff releasing last week, too. I mean,
it was a busy week.
And you probably had to edit and cut that the whole video for the live show to get that together,
Swank.
Right?
Swank did that. Jason did all that. I prepared all the audio, and Jason did the video, and he did a great job with that video.
Because it looks like you had at least, I don't know, three or four cameras from different points in it from different places being shown in there.
We had one, and then we took some, like, smartphone video from some people.
Yeah, slipped it in. Okay,
like,
yeah.
Like when Belushi ran up on stage and stuff.
Yes, yeah.
But the whole video turned out great. And it was a really great to see Robert Lopez made it to the show.
Absolutely. That was great. Yeah, that was really cool.
And, you know,
everyone seemed to love that.
I've been wanting to have a more general conversation about Star Wars with him. Not so, you know, music intensive or anything like that. Or anything that gets interrupted with, you know, Frozen talk.
Yeah. I have to agree. That back thinking about that day, thinking about the questions that everyone was being answered, that I agree with Jason in the sense that I think Empire is the best, but it's not my favorite. And I go back to Star Wars. The original Star Wars is my favorite because that's what I saw first. That's what brought me into this world.
Well, I mean, Star Wars is the one that started the whole thing.
Yes,
and it's the one that truly, in my opinion, gets designated Hollywood classic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all the rest are just part of the franchise. It's the film Star Wars is the one that has all of the elements that place it on the shelf next to things like The Wizard of Oz, you know, the great fantasies of all time. You know, or some of the Disney films, it gets placed up there on that pedestal. That like
anything that you can special Dark Side of the Moon to, right? Any movie?
What's that?
Any movie that you can sink Dark Side of the Moon to and watch it?
That's Wizard of Oz.
Yeah,
okay, have you tried sinking Dark Side up with A New Hope? Has anyone tried that yet?
I've heard people doing that.
Really?
I have not done it. No.
An interesting experiment. Maybe not Dark Side. Maybe there's another album out there.
Yeah. Maybe Metal or Saucer Full of Secrets or something.
Oh, it has to be Pink Floyd, though. Yeah.
Yeah, right.
It has to be Pink Floyd. I wish you were here, wouldn't it work?
No, I don't know. I've heard of people doing that. I don't know if it is as good as like Wizard of Oz or something, but I've never tried it.
I'm going to try syncing up the wall with The Last Jedi just to see what happens.
Yeah, there you go.
You never know. There might be moments.
There might be.
I think a lot of the Wizard of Oz, Dark Side of the Moon stuff is, you know, It's you know, it's questionable whether or not, I mean, some of that stuff they say, you know, but it's been a long time since I revisited that.
And I think mind altering substances are usually involved with these people.
Oh, it has to be. It has to be either that or like heavy drinking of things like bottles of cough syrup or what have you.
To get you there.
Wow. Yeah, it would have been perfect for our crowd at the after party last Saturday. Everyone would be pretty primed to watch that.
Yes.
You know, judging from, we still don't know who threw up in the garbage can, though, right?
No, I didn't even hear that. I did see people using the bathroom that weren't in the bathroom, but that was about it.
Oh, man. Well, you know. I think, you know, when you pass that Malort around with the blue milk and stuff, how we all weren't just completely ill on the sidewalk there. But what a great time. I'm so glad you made it.
Me too.
I really am.
Everyone in person, obviously, and it's just, it was, everyone was real friendly and just talking the wars all weekend and other things too. But it was just, a great time, you know. I'm sorry I've missed some of the past ones, really. I mean, I could have been at ICC Con and Anaheim, but I just had other things going on.
Well, there'll be more in the future, I hope, and maybe, you know, a little more frequency. I don't know. But we were really lucky to get the invite from Bristol and have that facility at our disposal and have access to a lot of great Star Wars fans on in the Northeast. So that was long overdue for us to come up there to visit, and I'm really, really glad we did, and I hope we get to come back again sometime soon. And I hope you're there with us when we return.
Yeah, I probably will be.
All right, Turtle Wars. Well, we're going to wrap it up. Great catching up with you. Great slideshow.
Thank you. Absolutely. And I would just say one other thing. If this gets released tomorrow, it gets released on George's birthday and my birthday. So,
wow.
Nice
present. You're really putting the pressure on me. I'm sitting on an RFR RPG I got to release. But you're demanding May 14th slot. All right.
No,
well, you're the VIP, so maybe we'll just delay RPG for a day or two and give you your wish there, young man.
You don't have to. You don't have to. I don't even really care about birthdays, but
yes, you do. Or you wouldn't have brought it up. Well, thanks again, Turtle Wars.
Yep. Thank you, Jimmy. Good to meet you finally, and
yes,
good
to see you. Chris Hagen, ladies and gentlemen. And thank you, everyone, for listening to RFR Q&A here on Patreon. Of course, this is the only place you can get the Q&A. And we're so happy you guys keep coming around. We're 200 shows deep. Looking forward to the next 200 shows. So with VIPs like Chris Hagen and all the rest, I'm sure we'll get there sooner than later. So thanks for all your contributions again, Chris, Turtle Wars, and everyone on Patreon for supporting RFR. So on behalf of Rebel Force Radio Q&A and Chris Turtle Wars Hagen, I am Jimmy Mack. And remember, Turtle,
the Force will be with you always.
I like knowing somebody named Turtle. It makes me feel like I'm part of the entourage.